nights.
A podcast of the evening.
What is that you're saying to yourself, maybe?
Normally, this is a program that is exclusive to our Patreon subscribers at patreon.com/linoleumknife, but it's time for the summer super splash spectacular.
Here's what that means.
Why don't you explain it?
I will. You got this dropped into your RSS or whatever, and I don't know what that means.
No, I know. I've never heard you say that before.
But I hear it's a word being
learning
used.
Terms.
It's a podcast word I've heard of sometimes. I've been podcasting for 10 years, and I don't
understand.
I don't exactly understand how it gets to people.
Elves.
Right. So, oops, sorry. Don't want to knock over your glass there.
Please don't.
You thought maybe you were going to hear an episode of Linoleum Knife. Original Linoleum Knife. And you will.
Yes.
But if you're hearing this for the first time and you don't know what Linoleum Nights is, it is a show that goes out to, as Alonzo said, the Patreon people who are at the top two subscription levels, $16 and $20 a month people. And it's a show that we decided to do at the request of one of the, more than one of the Patreon folks who said, what if y'all did a show where you talked about all the taboo things, the sex, the politics, the religion? What if also you spoke in a way that was more akin to the way you speak in your real life, which is nonstop profanity? We said, we can do both of those things very easily. Now, you're not going to hear any of that cussing
no.
today, because this is going into our Apple Tunes iFilm, what?
Apple Podcast.
Yeah, Apple Podcast.
Our RSS feed.
Now that thing. And
but this is a free form show.
We wanted everyone to have a chance to hear what it is, minus the profanity.
Yes.
So you can make a decision for yourself. Hey, do I want Linoleum Nights in my life? So the friend suggested Linoleum Knife After Dark. And then another friend said, no. Like Baywatch Nights, Linoleum Nights.
And here we are.
So here we are. A few years later. It has changed a little bit over the years we've done it.
Yeah, we've...
It's gone from that official mandate of the taboo topics to a more real freeform situation where we just, whatever we feel like talking about, we talk about. Once a month we do an Ask Us Anything episode. Once a month we do a music episode. And this is real rough. Like, I mean,
yeah,
you know. It's about once a month. And then sometime around after Trump got elected, we got fed up with everything and sick of hearing about all the hideous news. And we didn't feel like rehashing it again on a Sunday morning podcast. We always record it on Sunday mornings, by the way, even though it's called Linoleum Nights. And if you are a person who is a subscriber at that level, you get to watch this podcast being recorded live at our dining room table if you feel like it.
Yeah.
You know, the video goes up on Facebook Live, stays there, so you don't have to get up Sunday morning to watch it happen. You can watch it anytime you want, or you can listen to it just audio.
Yeah.
On the Patreon, whatever. If you don't want to look at our beauty so much, but if it blinds you,
but if you
stuns you,
if you are here live in the Facebook group, we do often respond to questions that are being asked by the people who are watching live,
and sometimes
we do that this
sometimes
hour.
We ignore them,
that also,
because there are too many.
Yes.
So, like, for example, you're watching live right now maybe, and you're seeing that I shaved my head yesterday.
Yes, you did.
Because we are back into
lockdown 2.0.
You and Alonzo and I have voluntarily, we have self-imposed isolation until the Delta numbers are manageable, or rather, not manageable, but lower. Yes. Much, much lower.
We now have three friends.
Yeah.
Who have all gotten sick with COVID. Not just tested positive, but like sick.
Sick. Listen, I don't have time for that.
No.
I'm 50 plus. I'm 57.
Yeah.
You're 54. Mm-hmm. We're both deliciously fat.
Yes. Marbled and curvy.
And you take high blood pressure medicine.
Yeah.
So what the... Wait, I was fixing to say a swear.
No, see?
No.
No,
we can't.
Not this week.
Not this week. Not in this Christian home.
No one's taking my sense of smell and taste away, because really, what's left for me?
If I
can't get that smell when you like unwrap the foil on a Hostess Ding Dong and get that sort of like fake chemical chocolate wafting into your nostrils, what's the point?
I'll tell you what food smell I did not like this week.
What's that?
In spite of the fact that you did a wonderful, nice thing for me. My husband had some donuts sent to the house, surprising me.
Yes.
In the morning. A lovely treat. It was a lovely, nice gesture on my spouse's part. And they selected an assortment of them.
Yeah.
And the assortment showed up with one of those maple ones. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a thing that you might not know about me. I cannot stand the maple donut.
But it's the fake maple.
Any maple donut anywhere, I cannot deal with it. It is always this fake, overbearing, like Yankee Candle smelling maple flavor. It's repulsive to me.
I ate it to get rid of it, and it was a big mistake.
They put one in the box. It kind of smell infected other things in the box.
Because not only did it have like the big thick goo of maple frosting on top of it, it had like a lemon curd inside. Who marries these two flavors?
I have made lemon pancakes before and put real maple syrup on them. But that's different because when you have real lemon and real thing going on.
Well, artificial both, not a good combo.
Not delicious. No. Not a good smell.
But I'm glad you enjoyed the donuts.
I did love them. Also, you. So, we're staying inside for a while. Like, we have two friends who will be coming over this week separately, and we're back to putting them on the balcony.
Mm-hmm.
They are both
vaccinated,
and they both get it.
They both understand it.
And they're both under 50, so we're there.
No, they're not.
Oh, wait, one of them isn't. Well, anyway, we're all risk groups. So it's just not... I am risk averse, you see.
At the best of times.
And even before there was a pandemic.
Yeah, that's kind of been one of your credos.
The pandemic, all the pandemic did, and is continuing to do, is emphasizing...
You were right all along.
My skills in being risk averse, and yes, I was right all along. Something bad was around the corner, and it happened. I always would say, something awful. Our doom, perhaps, right around the corner.
Certainly, as a germphobe, you are in your glory.
And then it happened. So.
Makes you want to treat me with a little more respect.
Doesn't it? Yeah. So, we're here. We're waiting. I've talked to at least one friend this week who said that this person and their spouse walked right into a Walgreens and said, "Hey, we would like a vaccine, please." Now, earlier in the year, they were both double vaccinated, but they were like, "We're getting a booster." And they just waltzed right in and they did it. He said, "Maybe that's unethical." I said, "You know what? I'm not out here to judge anybody anymore."
No, especially when you read about millions of doses getting thrown away because people skip their appointment or whatever. Yeah. Do what you got to do.
Exactly. So now, am I going to wait for the CDC to tell me when it's time for my booster? Yes, I am.
Yes.
There will be, I'm guaranteeing you, there's going to have to be a booster. You get a flu shot every year.
Yeah.
This is at least that. This is worse.
Yeah.
If I have to get a booster for COVID every 6 months, I don't give a dang, a heck, a hoot.
And we have to get a flu shot in the next couple months anyway.
That is correct.
Last year, we did it in a drive-thru.
So they are, that's true, I remember that. It was terrible. I have one immune compromised friend who was a transplant.
Yes, recipient.
Recipient. And the CDC just authorized boosters for immune suppressed people.
Yes.
So I'm excited that that friend gets to go out and get the third shot this week.
Right. But he's still going to have to pretty much keep it on lockdown though, right?
Kinda. I mean... Excuse me. Yes, that's the other thing about a live podcast. When you drink tea and it starts to repeat on you, on the mic, forgive me for that.
You get to hear it in beautiful stereophonic sound.
Yes. Yeah, we can't stop and pause when we have to cough or when the food is not going down the right way, the drink is not going down the right way. I've got a nice little cup of tea in my hand this morning.
Beautiful mug.
Yes. Oh, David. Just asked a question.
Yes.
On the thing, he says, Dave, can you show us the mug you're drinking out of? I sure can. Here it is.
See, this is what you're missing if you're not a Patreon member watching it on Facebook.
Check that out. How beautiful is that? It's gorgeous.
It's kind of a two-tone.
It's
terracotta at the bottom.
Brown and sky blue glaze.
Yeah.
It's from a Japanese ceramics maker whose name... Off the top of my head, I would need to have in front of me.
Is it on the bottom?
Can you look? Well, it's everything? Signed on the bottom, but it's not a... Okay. No, a signature is like squiggly
not
lines.
Not an imprint or anything. Okay.
He says, oh, that is beautiful. Thank you. It is beautiful. I bought three of them. Last year, I was feeling a little down because of just, you know, everything. And I went and bought... myself some new mugs because I thought, what else do I have in my life besides this husband?
I'm hoping by the time
my tea,
the weather cools off again, I get to have maybe a big mug that you find and like. Have you still not found me a big mug that you like?
Oh, I have.
Okay.
But it was the summer, and so you were like, you know, I'm having my iced coffee in my glass. So,
yeah. Okay.
Somebody has to have a mug that's like 40 ounces, like a big gulp.
I like a mug that's like the Cougar Town wine glass.
I'll tell you what you need to be using.
What's that?
When it's time for you to have the hot coffee again. Mm-hmm. The friend who sent us the Yetis.
Mm.
That thing, because it's the same material as my mug.
No, I know.
He sent you a big cup and me a mug. That thing will keep your coffee hot for an hour.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
That's what you gotta use.
Well, here's the thing. A, I don't mind it when it cools off. So it's not like keeping it hot is a priority necessarily.
Yeah, but when you have a hot coffee for an hour and every sip is still hot, you'll be like, yeah.
Fine.
That's how I feel when I have the mug, when I have the Yeti mug with tea in it. Like, I'm having green tea in this admittedly beautiful mug that I love right now. But it is 10:20 in the morning, and it is starting to lose temperature. Mm. So I'm on alert.
Gotcha.
I got to...
act fast.
I got to act fast, yeah.
Okay.
Getting back to the subject of disease and illness. Phil says, I remember... Phil commenting. I remember back in 1982, my best friend in high school was so worried because he said there's no way we were not going to catch herpes when we matured and started having sex in college. Boy, did we get awakening after that year with HIV.
Mm.
Yeah. That's why I was absolutely sexless during, more than half of the 80s.
Yeah.
Because... I was like, oh, no, I'm not out here to get anything from anybody, especially I'm all out here not telling anyone I'm doing anything. So you're certainly not going to. Yeah.
No, no, for sure. I remember there was a there was some comic collection that I bought in the late 80s, early 90s. It was like, and it was different artists and writers doing it. It was a fundraiser for, you know, some AIDS organization. And one of them, it was like two women talking about like the date that one of them had been on the night before. And they were talking about like, you know, all the various sort of safe sex things. And then they mentioned something about like, oh, and at least on top of everything else, you know, you won't get pregnant. And the woman's like, I forgot about pregnancy.
Right. So in my world topics portion of my run of show thing, I have COVID, climate, welfare.
No fun.
And
it's
so
one of those weeks.
Well, I don't want to talk about the climate because the climate report this past week was not not good. No. And so I am...
And far too many Democratic legislators take money from frackers, so
it's too much
going to happen
to think about right now, especially when I know that you and I can recycle our buttholes off for the rest of our lives, and it won't mean anything.
Of course.
The greatest corporate polluters in the world...
Did you,
which is about 100 companies, they have to be seriously punished for their planet destruction, and they have to stop and be forced
yeah.
to change. Now, the people have the power on some level to try to make that happen by supporting politicians who will, you know, push for this. Unfortunately, most of them are, except for like the socialists, are in the top, are in the pocket of these companies.
Yeah.
And that is, fills me with despair.
Yeah.
So,
did you see the tweet that I shared? The guy who said, you know, if we would all recycle and drive electric cars
right.
and not stop using plastic straws, 100 companies would still be responsible for 70% of the Earth's
right.
pollution.
Yeah. A friend and neighbor, Gary Cotty's on vacation right now.
Yes.
He's up with his folks in Massachusetts.
Living his best life.
Yeah. And he's like, what if I bought a house like up in like Maine? We could all be climate refugees there. I said, I will go.
Yeah.
I will go.
We saw 2012. We know Los Angeles gets subsumed by the Pacific.
I will go. You know, I'm 50, I'm 57. Next 10 years, I spend perfecting my baking skills. I start a Mildred Pierce situation out of our kitchen. Can do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Remember that? Remember that? Remember in Mildred Pierce when she puts that big cake up? And it's like the biggest damn cake you've ever seen in your life. It's like, it had to be an 18-inch
yeah.
cake. It was just astonishing. It was so wide and so tall. And I was like, how does a person make a cake that big? It was so huge.
Well, and you practically keep baker's hours anyway. You'd only have to start waking up yeah. a few hours earlier to go in and make the croissant.
Yeah, exactly. First, I have to learn how to make croissants.
Yes.
But, you know. That's called Paul Tran Baker, man.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm going to have lessons. I got lessons.
He'll give you the scoop.
Yeah. Now, did you see the thing? Let's move on from climate because it's too
Please.
Upsetting. Did you see the thing? The clip from the Laura Ingraham show?
Oh, yeah. The star of everybody and they'll go back to work clip.
Do you know? Okay. If you didn't get this video... Here, I'm going to tell you all about it. Laura Ingraham, who is a worthless human being.
Yes.
Was on her show, and she had a guy on who is the host of that show, Bar Rescue. You know that show?
I know of it.
It's a reality show. Remember Tabitha's Salon?
I was going to say, I watched Tabitha's Salon Rescue, and she did a Bar Rescue too, right?
I don't remember, but Tabitha had a show.
Didn't she go fix some gay bar in San Diego?
Maybe.
Bubbles. Ripples.
Bubbles.
Ripples.
Bubbles.
No, it was Ripples.
Ripples and Bubbles.
Ripples.
So, Some guy named Taffer, last name Taffer, mm-hmm. hosts a show called Bar Rescue. Now, why he was on the show with her is, well, it was a mystery, but I'll tell you why I learned it
wasn't. The right is starved for celebrities.
Yeah. This guy Taffer started work in 1973 at a little West Hollywood establishment named Barney's Beanery.
Oh, you don't say.
Now, in 1973, West Hollywood was already a growing gay community.
Yes.
But Barney's Beanery held the distinction of being a notoriously anti-gay
establishment
in the neighborhood. They had actually had a sign.
Yes.
On the bar that said, no F words allowed.
No,
F words, get out, stay out.
Yeah. And they misspelled F word.
Yeah, they misspelled it too. Now, Barney's Beanery is no longer like this.
No, no.
They've changed hands many times in the past 50 years. The new owner is like, please, please, we're part of this queer community. Please come in. The past is a thing we understand happened, but I'm the new owner and we want everything to be different now, et cetera, et cetera. But.
In the 70s.
In the 70s, this guy was a bartender there, enforcing the code. All right. Then he managed the Troubadour for a while, whipped them into shape. And so he's one of those bosses who comes in and delivers the I don't want to call it tough love. The stuff that makes people want to quit. What's that?
Discipline.
Yeah. So Laura Ingraham says, what if we just cut off the unemployment, making people go back to work?
Yeah.
And she says, hunger is a pretty powerful thing. And the bar rescue guy says, they only feed a military dog at night because a hungry dog is an obedient dog. Well, if we're not causing hungry people to work, just saying. So there's a guy I follow on Twitter named David Roberts. He's a political writer. He had this tweet thread where he pretty much capped it up. He put it in a capsule. I'm just going to read you what he wrote.
Okay.
There's one core conviction of reactionaries, right-wing people, is that everyone is selfish. Everyone is out for themselves, their family, their tribe, that no one acts in a pro-social or moral or responsible manner, except under threat. And that's what God and religion are to them. Permanent threats of punishment, the only thing that could possibly induce large numbers of people to behave. Without that threat, everyone just reverts to brutal, callous selfishness. What's important to note is that this is pure projection. Empirical research is clear that when it comes to training, pets, kids, employees, positive reinforcement is overwhelmingly more effective than punishment or threat of punishment. People behave well and perform well when they are empowered, when they feel valued, when they have a sense of agency and efficacy, not when they are cowed and beaten like starved dogs. Reactionaries cannot accept this. They quite literally can't imagine or envision it. In a reactionary worldview, there are only hierarchies. There is only dominance and submission. And the only way to get what you want is to be dominant, which means imposing pain and humiliation on those below you until they comply. And that is why the world is full of horrible bosses. People are socialized into this twisted worldview, and they come to think that only being feared can make them effective. But if you talk to anyone who's worked for a successful organization, you'll hear about bosses who listen to them, who see them, who empower them. So it's not realism to say that people will be lazy unless they are forced to work by the threat of starvation. It is projection from emotionally stunted people who themselves wouldn't lift a finger for anyone unless they were forced.
Mic drop.
Steven asks, what is Alonzo thinking about right now?
I'm just listening. And I'm a little warm, so I'm just trying to sort of fan myself without shaking the table.
You got a fan? You have your fan on.
No, it's over, it's over there.
No, it's too bad.
Quit putting me on blast, Steven.
So anyway, yeah, that's the thing. It's like they're gonna do their best, and they might win at this idea that they've always loved to push, is that pay poor people less to make them work harder.
Yes.
Pay rich people more as an incentive to pay poor people less. Yeah, because that's really what it all comes down to.
Yeah.
Right-wing conservative economics are how you think up ways to justify your greed.
Poor people will squander their money, but rich people will invest
on
it.
Food.
Yes, exactly. And shelter and clothing. But rich people will invest it wisely offshore in the Cayman Islands so that it can't be taxed.
So, here's the thing we do quite often on Linoleum Nights. The pandemic has made me much more, let me say this differently, even more attentive to my neighbors. Mm-hmm. And by attentive, I mean snooping and eavesdropping.
Looking out the window.
And looking out the window and being generally a busybody. I don't get involved with any of them. I don't engage with them. I just like to know what they're doing. I like to see their comings and their goings, their whereabouts. And this has been, drilled into me by a series of neighbors that we have had who are genuinely pathological, destructive, and violent. So when you have people like that living very close to you, you start
getting an alert,
keeping track of what they might be out to do to harm you. So during the pandemic, as I'm, standing on the balcony, drinking tea, getting vitamin D, standing at the window, in the kitchen, cooking, washing dishes, looking out the window, out onto the street in front of us, I begin noticing neighbors that I've never seen before. Skateboard guy. Other people like that. The dude who walks the golden retriever that always carries a little doll. Mm-hmm. The dude does not carry the little doll.
The retriever.
The old dog carries a doll in its mouth all the time, every day. One of our neighbors is a terrible person with terrible dogs. We've discussed her before. She's young, she's inconsiderate, and her dogs shriek like they're being murdered.
And it's her fault the dogs are terrible because she can't be bothered to, like...
Can't be bothered to help them learn.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so each week on Linoleum Nights, I now give a neighborhood award.
Yes.
An award to the neighbor that is making me happy. I think the first one I gave out, and this involves nothing more than me saying that they get an award. They don't get a certificate.
Yeah.
They don't get a
plaque.
They'll
never know they won.
They don't get a trophy. They'll never know that they won the neighborhood award, but I will know. This week's neighborhood award is a tie.
I think I know one of them.
One of them is a man who has lived across the street for almost as long as we have lived here. Mm-hmm. And so his building number is very similar to ours. He lives in apartment 7 of the building he lives in.
As do we.
And his name is Dave. And so our mail is constantly being misdelivered. And so one of us is always like, hey, package, hey, envelope, hey, package. Finally, he had the great idea to come over with a package and say, why don't we just exchange numbers?
So we can tell each other what's going on.
So we can tell each other. And it had never occurred to me in all this time to ask for that. I've just been carrying it over.
Oh, this is how bad it is. So this last package, the one that he brought over by hand, he called FedEx and asked them to pick it up and to please redeliver it to the correct address.
And they?
And FedEx came to us. And the punchline is, the package in question wasn't to Dave, it was to me. So they don't even have the David excuse to fall back on. It's crazy.
So, so he gets the neighborhood award for having a good idea.
Yes.
The other neighborhood award winner is the guy who yelled at...
This is the one I knew.
The bad dog lady.
Yes.
And I don't know who he is. His voice shot out in the afternoon sun. And I couldn't tell where it came from. Did it come from this building? Did it come from the street? Did it come from a neighboring building?
Because those dogs are loud enough that a lot of people are...
Is the entire block fed up? I'm hoping yes. I'm hoping this is a groundswell of negative attention that punishment or the threat of punishment will cause her to change, because positive reinforcement has not worked. And that is where the guy on Twitter is a little wrong, because sometimes positive reinforcement only goes so far. Yeah. Sometimes you must punish. And I'm looking forward to the punishment. But out of the blue, he just yells, "Shut up!"
Hero.
And it felt so nice, because you know what I've never done? Yelled, "Shut up."
No, I know. Me neither.
You know why? My voice is recognizable.
I didn't even yell at her the day that I was walking down the steps and one of those dogs came charging right at me. Although then it turned out it was actually running to yap at one of the dogs downstairs from us, but still, I couldn't tell where it was going.
So anyway, anonymous man, you're the NABY winner of the day.
Yes.
My neighborhood award.
You and other Dave.
Now, as you said earlier, once a month we do an Ask Us Anything episode.
Yes.
And quite often we don't have enough time to get to all of them. Mm-hmm. So we save them. We parse them out. We dole them out. And so we have one today, a leftover one. Mm-hmm. And it's from Andrew. And here it is. "Guys, I'm currently listening to the latest Linoleum Nights, number 205, where you both talk about tipping and how much you tip. As an Australian, the concept of tips feels a little odd and hard to grapple with. Here, if we tip at a restaurant, they'll likely give you a strange look. Now, of course, our restaurant employees are paid properly and don't live off tips."
That's the difference.
"Mostly, there are more than a few cases of restaurant owners skiving employees of their rightful wage." Skiving is not a word we use in the United States. It basically means cheating people out of something. Yeah. "But mostly, we don't tip here."
Deep Sea Skiving by Funboy 3.
Bananarama.
Bananarama, sorry.
Come on, man.
Sorry.
"Aussies visiting America are usually known for not tipping. So when I visited, I did try, and I made a good name to make a good name for us by tipping what I thought was a suitable amount, about 20%. That is a suitable amount. That's like kind of the baseline.
Yeah.
You did the right thing. What I find hard to figure out is, knowing that tipping is generally accepted as being a permanent thing in American society, how do you budget for tipping when going out getting grocery deliveries? Does that play into what you get? And do you see a future where tipping is no longer a thing in America?"
Well, a couple questions there. I mean, I don't know that I ever sit down to specifically budget what my, you know, if I'm going out to eat, you know, usually the choice of restaurant kind of fits into my over general budget of like what I'm planning to spend. And then, yeah, the tip will be part of that.
If I'm going to Joey's Cafe around the corner,
right,
that tip is not going to be huge because that food is not super expensive.
Yeah.
But I dang well tell you. If we're going to Key Spaca, not only am I looking at the menu beforehand online and finding out how much things cost, I am then mentally sort of taking my little... I'm not mentally doing anything. I'm taking my little calculator. And I'm like, so if this meal costs this much money, the tip is going to be this much money. And that's kind of the... I pre-budget in my head.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's like the old saying, if you can't afford a tip, you can't afford to eat out. And then, you know, will it ever go away in America?
Maybe.
I mean, maybe. Look, I'd like to think that everything's kind of up in the air right now with the way that wages and employment and whatnot are. And I think the restaurants are going to have to really look at their game, because you've got now a workplace saying, you know what? you have exploited us for decades, and
right.
we're not playing that anymore.
Right.
If you want us to come back, you're going to pay us what we actually are worth. So, yeah, I would love to see a world in which, you know, food service workers were given fair salaries so they didn't have to be tipped. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, universal healthcare. It's one of those concepts that other countries have been able to wrap their arms around, and we are painfully behind on.
Now, to follow up on a topic that is related to this regarding the grocery deliveries, because I do tip minimum 20% on the grocery deliveries as well. I have been taken to task privately for my habit of pretending not to be home when the grocery delivery shows up. And I realized something. A, everyone is right. B, I let my fear of the pandemic guide my behavior.
Yes.
Because I was thinking about, like, was I like this before the pandemic? When something got delivered to the house, was I like this?
You were not.
I was not. I would say, hello, how are you? Good morning, good afternoon. You know, thank you very much. I'll sign right here for that package, et cetera, et cetera. Here's your tip, whatever. The minute the pandemic happened, I thought, ooh, okay, so we can get deliveries in a no-contact way. Let's just avoid all that awkward talking.
Even though, the difference here being, like, I would say thank you through a closed door.
Right. This week, as we watched the finale of the show, Schmigadoon, Keegan-Michael Key said, his character said, the reason I became a doctor was so that I could help people without talking to them. And I thought, see,
you felt seen. Okay.
That, yeah. The reason I became a scared person hiding inside is so I wouldn't have to talk to anybody. Now, so that's moving on to another thing that we do every month. Mm-hmm. We usually devote an every month, once a month episode to talking about music. Because over the years, people are like, you guys review movies on Linoleum Knife. You talk about TV on LKTV. You know, you've got a food podcast, which is Linoleum Knife and Fork.
All of which you'll be getting samples of in the coming weeks.
Yeah. But I don't hear you talk too much about music other than Dave used to be punk rock and then also used to be part of the evangelical church and went to lots of Christian rock concerts. Alonzo likes Pizzicato 5 and what else? We don't know. So we tend to do one a month, music-themed episodes where we kind of talk more about that.
We talk about older stuff. We talk about, Dave will force me to listen to 10 popular songs with the Youngs right now. Or
That, honestly, making you listen to the songs from the top 40 is always my favorite. Yeah. Because I do love watching you be unhappy.
Every great marriage is built on that.
So a terrible thing, a very terrible thing, like yes. A really super terrible thing happened this week. One of my favorite people, who I don't really talk about very much, because she was sort of niche, even among people I know who have like broad range of taste in music. Nancy Griffith,
yeah,
Texas singer-songwriter, country folk person. She died 68 years old. Suddenly, this was just something I learned Friday the minute it became news. And I've spent the past 48 hours not feeling great about that. And I don't tend to react emotionally to the death of artists, actors, musicians, even if I really liked them. Because I just think, well, they made wonderful things that you loved. You never knew them. You never were their friend. They didn't, you never met them. So this could be something that you maybe keep in perspective, you know. But every once in a while, one comes along that you can't quite keep it in perspective. Because for me, Nancy Griffith was, well, first of all, I got introduced to her in the 1980s. This friend of mine named Heather gave me a cassette. And Heather and I were not, didn't have a lot in common, but we liked each other because we both had similar sort of senses of humor, I guess. Mm. I had an unusual number of friends in the 80s who smoked, not because they were super addicted, but because they thought it was cool.
Right.
It gave them that, edge. You know, leave me alone kind of thing. Mm. I never smoked, but anyway, Heather smoked. And one day she's, you know, smoking and she hands me a cassette and she goes, here, she goes, I know you're Mr. Punk Rock or whatever. she goes, but listen to this because you need to listen to this. And I said, who is it? And she said, it's Nancy Griffith. And I said, country, right? She goes, yes, I know, country, terrible, blah, blah, blah. I go, no. You don't understand. One thing you don't know about me, that I grew up listening to lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of country music because my father listened to it exclusively. My father only listened to country music. So I have a deep bench of old-timey stuff.
Right.
And she goes, well, she goes, if you like the old-timey stuff, you'll like her. So I put it on, went at my house, and I listened to it, and she was right. Not only was Nancy Griffith old-timey sounding, she was so old-timey sounding that she never had hits on the radio. Because she had this twangy kind of voice, you know, that was not not popular with 80s, 90s country audiences. Now, the NPR folks ate her up.
Right.
Because she would perform with people like Roseanne Cash and Mary Chapin Carpenter and Iris DeMent.
She was more likely to have fans in the singer-songwriter world than in the country world.
Townes Van Zandt, people like that. I loved her so much. Heather was right. I loved her so much. She came to represent to me the version of Texas that I felt comfortable being in.
Mm.
You know, Texas gets a lot of heat for justifiable reasons because they generally suck over there. And I know this because I lived there for a long, long time. But there's always, there will always be and always has been a subpopulation of great, awesome people in Texas.
Molly Ivins.
Molly Ivins. Yeah. Yes. Nancy Griffith is Molly Ivins with a guitar. That's perfectly accurate. She didn't sing about politics.
No.
Well, not often. Mm-hmm. Not until George W. Bush got into office. She didn't sing about politics. She sang story songs. She sang songs that were not necessarily story songs. Maybe they were sort of like scenario songs, like two people are having a conversation. You know, one person's talking to another person about, you know, I have been in love with you my whole life, but I haven't been able to tell you, and so I have to do it now while I'm drunk, you know, like that kind of song. And then she sang songs that were my very favorite kind of songs. Impossibly sad. Always broken heart love songs about people who didn't break up because they couldn't get along. They broke up because someone forced them apart. Circumstances tore them apart. The world pulled them apart. You know, they were migrant workers and they had to go work in different fields. You know, like something that tore these people up. And now she's going to sing a song about that breakup and how it feels 15 years later. And I defy you to listen to some of these songs and not just start crying, even if you aren't sad at all. You can be in a good mood and hear a Nancy Griffith sad heartbreak song and start crying, and you don't know why. You're just like, I don't know, I'm just going to cry now. Like, she was perfect. She was the kind of literate, intelligent, progressive kind of Texan. Hardcore Texan. She was from Seguin. Yeah. I don't know if y'all know where that is, but it's in the middle of nowhere.
She had her big break at the Kerrville Folk Festival.
Yeah. Also, when you saw her live, her shows, she was Springsteen. Like, her shows would go on for 2.5, 3 hours. Thank God they're always in comfy, air-conditioned old movie theaters, old, you know, music hall kind of places in Texas. But when I saw her in 91, I think, that show went on forever. And I just was like, this is fantastic. Also, it's so comfortably cool in here.
Yeah, I literally woke up from a nap, read it on Twitter, and I immediately felt a gut punch because I had to tell you. And I knew you were going to be like,
yeah,
it was going to hit hard.
Distraught. I will not be getting over this anytime soon. I'm really unhappy, but I would love it if you don't know who she is. Here are some records. She's albums, three perfect albums. Last of the True Believers, Little Love Affairs, and Lone Star State of Mind. There's a live record. There's a live record. She wrote a song on her first album called There's a Light Beyond These Woods, Mary Margaret, that is like... her first two records are real folk before she became more country-ish mm-hmm. in it. But holy cow. I could just talk and talk and talk and talk about her, and I'm going to stop now because I might start crying. The very first mixtape I ever made for Alonzo Duralde in 1990, what, five?
Five, yeah.
I put a song by hers on it called So Long Ago. And it's one of those, we were in love, and then my daddy broke us up because he didn't like it, and now we're sad and apart, we're lonely, and we ran into a bar, we ran into each other at a bar, and we just didn't look at each other.
And the spark was gone.
Yeah, we didn't even look at each other, and now we're still sad and lonely. The end?
What are you saying to me with this?
Greg, great. I'm saying, well, you know what I was saying to you? Do you know what I was saying to you with that song on that tape? Is it Nancy Griffith amazing? Are you crying? You should be crying.
I was.
He did. Yeah. Greg Dean Schmitz says, this is the way you would feel if Morrissey died, but if he wasn't a horrible person. I'll tell you something. When Morrissey dies, I might still feel bad. Because I love Morrissey too, and I know he's turned into like this gross, terrible person, but there was this moment in the 80s when I needed him and he was there. And the Smiths meant a lot to me then, and they still do. And I'm trying to, you know, in my head, I have divided I've drawn the line in my head. You know, it's that thing, the art or the artist. Well, the art before I knew the artist was puke. And that's kind of how it is with me and Morrissey.
I mean, this is a different level of horribleness, but I mean, I find it a little easier to listen to Michael Jackson music now that I don't have to deal with Michael Jackson being alive.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, what dead musician do you miss, Alonzo?
It's weird. You asked me that question earlier, and I don't think I've really had the thing where somebody I'm a giant fan of, like Prince is probably as close as I've got.
Prince was pretty rough. Yeah, I loved Prince.
Because like so many of the old school singers who were alive when we were kids, you know, Sinatra, Bing Crosby, Ella Fitzgerald, people, you know, Nina Simone, they were already of a previous era.
They were old before you became fans. Yeah.
So you knew that.
You knew that was coming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But like, you know, like I remember where I was when Kurt Cobain died, but I had not been super immersed into Nirvana at that point.
Right.
So it didn't feel the same to me as it might have for somebody else. But that hit me the way that the death of River Phoenix hit me. just in terms of like, what?
Yeah.
Like, it didn't make any sense because they were so young and vibrant and, you know, their careers were peaking and it was just like so random that it would just be over, you know.
The last year of Kurt Cobain's life, there were many news reports something was wrong. And so before he killed himself, you know, there were incidents where he was, you know, always in the hospital, you know, like, and I was thinking, what's happening? So when it happened, I was shocked, but also there had been a little bit of preparation for it, kind of. And then any grieving that I was going to do was subsumed by the fact that I was the youngest person where I worked. And I had to explain it over and over again to people, all of them who were 5, 10, 15, 20 years older than me. And I was like, okay, he was in this band. You know, like that. It became national news.
Right.
And it was suddenly huge. And people who weren't paying attention to him were like, I'm sorry, who was this?
Why is this a thing?
Yeah. And so that was, I became an explainer for the next week. So,
like, okay. Remember how you felt when John Lennon died?
Or Elvis or whatever. Yeah. You know, yeah.
What about you? Besides Ms. Griffith, what about you?
Joe Strummer was shocking. Who else? Off the top of my head, I don't know. But the...
if you had been a big Amy Winehouse fan, I'm sure that was like...
I liked Amy Winehouse. Yeah. That was also shocking, you know. But
that was also one where there were
people whose music you like, but that you don't feel...
connected to.
A real personal connection to them in terms of like, they're singing about things I know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, when Jim Henson died...
Right.
I remember listening to the NPR open in my car and crying.
Yeah.
Like, that was a big thing for me. But musicians, it hasn't happened yet, but it will, I'm sure.
Well, that thing you do, I'm sorry, the name, Stacy's mom. Stacy's mom.
Adam Schlesinger.
Adam Schlesinger. That was very upsetting.
That was.
You know. Stacy's mom. So we got 5 minutes left. We stole from the old Pop Rocket podcast the idea of The Jam, the song of the week.
Yeah.
They stopped being a podcast, so we stole their idea. Because we love them.
Yes.
To this day. But we stole their idea. What's your jam this week?
Basement Jaxx's Good Luck.
What year is that from? The
2000s. I think early 2000s.
Yeah. Tell me.
It's a fun song that is also a kiss-off song.
Uh-huh.
Like the chorus is literally, good luck in your new bed, enjoy your nightmares on it.
Featuring Lisa Kikaula.
Yeah.
So what year is that song? 2004.
Like, yeah. I like
that's a good song.
I like an angry breakup song that is also like a, you know, get on the dance floor song.
Steven just asked, what happens when Dolly Parton dies? A month-long mourning period. That'll be true.
I was all excited to hear
this. Because she's like the blanket that covers everyone.
Yeah.
I don't know a person.
She's the last thing that Red and Blue America can agree on.
Yeah. I don't think they like her anymore.
Okay, she's too aggressive.
I don't think the conservatives like Dolly anymore. I know that guy from Stained hates Bruce Springsteen.
I was excited that she had she was putting out a novel in May, but then I found out that she's writing it with James Patterson.
What should I know about James Patterson?
He's just an airport hack.
What does he write though? What are his books? What is a book by James Patterson? I even know a title?
I think thrillers. Did he write one with Bill Clinton?
Does he just do collabs?
I guess. Yeah.
What? I'm serious. Is there a name of a novel that he would write that I should know about?
Did he write like the Along Came a Spider ones. Is that him?
Hang on, I'm looking him up.
I don't even know. I just know that I'm not interested if it's him.
Bibliography. There's a whole different. There's a whole separate Wikipedia page.
Well, yeah, because he's got like probably got more than 100 titles.
All right. Along Came a Spider.
Yes.
Okay. Kiss the Girls.
He's that guy.
This is the Alex Cross series.
That guy. Okay. He's the guy on the boat in that movie with Meryl Streep.
What?
Remember in the Soderbergh movie where they're on the taking the cruise to London?
Wow, and this guy.
There's like she's there as the important literary author.
He has written he's written 200 books.
And he's the super popular guy.
Right.
That's James Patterson. He's that guy.
Seriously, he's got so many different series of novels.
Yeah. I'm sure
and they're all like in order with like
sure he has
numbers
a team of uncredited, you know,
helpers.
Like, yeah.
Wow, I thought Stephen King wrote a lot of books.
The elves who make the shoes.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I've never read a single one of them.
Me neither. Not starting now. Sorry, Dolly. What's your jam this week?
My jam this week is one that maybe I gave once before, but I can't remember if I did. So if I did, I don't care because it's still great. Yarbrough and Peoples, Don't Stop the Music. Late 70s.
Please don't stop the... Wait.
No.
Wrong one?
Very wrong
one. Okay, sorry. Which one is this?
It's from the late 70s. It's like, don't you stop it. Don't you stop the music. And then the puppets come up and they go.
Not seen the puppets.
You see the puppets? They sang with these puppets. The song is amazing and is still great after like 40 years.
The
song's
like
puppets. A 41, 42-year-old song.
I know the
I'll
song.
I'll pull the video up on YouTube.
Okay, yeah.
But they would perform it like on TV or whatever. These puppets would pop up. Remember the part in the song where it's like these high-pitched little voices? It's like, you don't really want to stop? No!
And
Yeah. Well, there's always like puppets that would come up.
I've only heard the song. I haven't seen the video. You don't really want to stop?
All right, well, we're fixing to be done here.
Okay.
Anyway, Yarbrough and Peoples, they were from Texas too.
Well,
yeah, they were from Dallas. And then they recorded for like 6 years and then they quit and they started their own music production company. They songwrite for other people.
Good for them.
Yeah. Because they only had one big hit.
Right.
But it was an all-timer.
Mm-hmm.
If you see a lowrider going down the street and the hydraulics are moving and they don't have Yarbrough and Peoples coming out of the window,
they're doing it wrong.
Then they are not doing the right thing. Yeah.
Well.
And there should always be more lowriders doing that. Preferably down the streets of Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood. I shouldn't have to drive so far away to see them.
All right, for everyone watching on YouTube, for everyone watching on Facebook. Thank you for watching. For everyone listening, thank you. If you are a Patreon subscriber, thank you for being that. And if you aren't, maybe think about being one at patreon.com/linoleumknife. Linoleum Knights is just one of the many awesome digital extras that we offer. Like I said, over the course of the next week or so, you will get samples of LKTV, a podcast of the television, Linoleum Knife and Fork, our food podcast. Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife, where we go in deep on a single film.
Yeah.
Enjoy this as we take some time off in August. And if it induces you to hop onto our Patreon club, so much the better. We'll be back with Linoleum Nights in September, late August,
sometime soon. You won't have to wait very long.
Yeah, it's fine. Just, you know, live your life.
All right.
Until next time.
Good night.
Good night.